The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. As the title says, luckily, the Jordan Hicks era is over in Boston. Red Sox have traded Jordan Hicks and David Sandlin to the Chicago White Sox for a young right-hander named Gage Zeal, 22 years old. They also clear $16 million of the remaining $24 million from Jordan Hicks' contract. That brings them now to $258 million total for their luxury tax payroll. So they are just under the luxury tax threshold, which is at 264. So a pretty pragmatic trade for the Red Sox. And obviously Jordan Hicks didn't quite cut it here. So now he'll try and cut it in Chicago. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry Cushman and Chris Filico. So, well, we're kind of in the doldrums of the offseason now, guys. It's like, not much going on. The big free agents have all signed. There's little trades being made here and there. There's a couple guys left on the free agent market, but probably not fits for Boston. So at this point, we're all just kind of waiting for, you know, a Jeff Passan breaking news kind of thing, but it's probably not going to be anything major at this point. So in terms of this Jordan Hicks trade, how do you guys feel? Like, you know, do you think this was a smart move to attach Sandlin just to get rid of the money? Or do you think, well, you know, they really didn't have to do that?
I mean, I think it was quote-unquote masterclass. You know, Jeremy always says on this podcast that you trade your prospects, quote-unquote prospects, for bona fide talent. I'll take it a step further. To get rid of albatrosses, you do the same. And I mean, a lot of hype behind David Sandlin. I wish him well. I mean, if he turns out to be great, so be it. It would suck, and it would be right up the Red Sox alley if that happened. But anything to get rid of Jordan Hicks and to be able to save $16 million is fantastic. I think for me, where I have pause for concern in this whole thing is nothing to do with the trade itself. It's that we clear $16 million and we spend none of it. And the fact that we are, I think you said $258 million for our payroll, and we still don't have an ounce of power in this lineup is true cause for concern for the ball going in 2026.
We had to free up money. We're over the second luxury tax. And, you know, you can say, oh, you know, you should be spending money. And we should be. But you shouldn't be spending money on the crap that we have. This isn't a roster that should be over the second luxury tax threshold. You know, we've got some dead money with Yoshida. You know, the Story contract. I mean, you're not getting a $22 million player. That's got it inflated a little bit. And you had Jordan Hicks making $12 million a year, who is an absolute bust. I mean, he was at the height of his career as, I can't remember, was the eighth inning guy or the ninth inning guy for St. Louis. Like, that's what put him on the map. He was a dominant late inning guy for a few years. And then the Giants thought they could turn him into a starter, and they probably ruined him. You know, he was probably 2012 Daniel Bard. Just seemed like ruined. And, you know, and then we ended up with him as part of the Devers trade, and then we couldn't fix him. And I don't know if that's an indictment on the Red Sox pitching program. Maybe that's a little unfair because you are starting to see the fruits of it. And, that's the one thing I've consistently given Breslow credit for is infrastructurally, he has done a lot for the Red Sox in terms of that, you know, building a program. So I'm glad he's gone. I'm not going to miss David Sandlin. I don't even know what he looks like, to be honest. I don't watch Worcester games, but I did kind of lie because I pulled up his MILB page, but and ironically, he looks a lot like Will Middlebrooks. That's the best comp. But he had a 4.5 ERA last year across 32 games, 106 innings pitched. He struck out almost exactly one per inning, had a whip of 1.37. So this doesn't look like a guy who is going to suck in the minors and then magically figure it out when he gets called up to the big league club. I mean, he's just a busted prospect. And how old is he, by the way? He's got to be up there.
He's 24.
Actually, you're right. He'll be 25 this month, actually. So that's getting up there for not having made your MLB debut. You better be on the precipice of it by now. And he certainly doesn't look like he's going to be there. And we don't have to suffer through a predictably terrible outing by Jordan Hicks in a high leverage situation when Whitlock's unavailable or Chapman's unavailable. And I don't think even he's not even going to eat innings for you in mop up duty. Like, there was no value, and I'm glad we got rid of him. And I guess the fact that we only ate $8 million is fine. I mean, I think it would be unreasonable to expect a team to eat the whole thing, to take it on. Initially, I forgot he was controllable for 2 years. So when I saw the $8 million being eaten, I thought that was $8 million out of 12. And I'm like, oh man, we got rid of him. But my Facebook group that I'm in kind of corrected me on that. So glad it's over.
Yeah, I'm glad the Jordan Hicks era is over. Anytime you have a guy who, you know, a team tries to turn him into a starter and it doesn't work, he's pretty much broken forever. I mean, you know, there's certain guys that can bounce back from it, like Matt Strom, you know, signed with the Phillies. They wanted to make him a starter. Didn't work out. He did end up going back to the bullpen. He was very successful there. But I think back to guys like, you know, you mentioned Daniel Bard. That was a good one. Joba Chamberlain was another one. The Yankees completely ruined him by trying to make him a starter. And same thing happened to Jordan Hicks. Giants thought they could make him a starter. They paid him a lot of money, and you know, they just kind of fell in love with the velocity in his arm, and it never worked. So I'm glad that he's gone. I don't mind attaching David Sandlin to get rid of more of the money. I think that, you know, again, 24 years old, going to be 25 soon. If you're not knocking on the door for the majors at that point, then you're probably not going to end up being anything that we're going to miss. You know, he pitched well in Double-A, but then went to Worcester and got his lips ripped off. So, you know, that's a guy that probably needs more time to develop, and maybe at some point he'll end up being like a Cooper Criswell, where in his late 20s he can be like a swingman for someone. But David Sandlin was not going to be like your future ace. And I think it's smart that the Red Sox identified that, because they had a few guys like that. I kind of put Hunter Dobbins and Richard Fitz in that category too, you know, and they shipped those guys off as well. It's like, these guys that are in their mid to, you know, entering their late 20s that just really aren't, you know, cracking a rotation. They're only getting in there because of injuries. Those are guys you can afford to part with. So I don't mind the trade at all. You got a 22-year-old in return. So no idea if that kid's going to be any good. His numbers are kind of all over the place. He hasn't even made it out of like high A ball at this moment. So we'll see. Maybe the Red Sox pitching program can do something with him. But, I think at the end of the day, just getting rid of some of that money and getting rid of a guy who was literally just hurting your team. I mean, Jordan Hicks provided no value. He was negative value for you. I think it's interesting, though, that he gets traded, you know, in a package to mostly dump salary, and then you get a young guy back. His name was mentioned when, you know, the reports came out the Red Sox were trying to trade away some of their pitching depth for a middle infielder. Right, when you hear about Nico Horner and all these other guys they're trying to get for second base. So this trade tells me that literally no one wanted Jordan Hicks. And the only reason you were able to get rid of him is because, A, it's the White Sox, who are so bereft of talent that they're willing to sign anybody. And they've actually had a pretty strong offseason, the White Sox. So, you know, they're kind of at least attempting to do something. And B, you were able to get rid of him because you attached, you know, a prospect to him. That maybe the White Sox look at David Sandlin and go, okay, you know, maybe he can compete for the number 5 starter job or something like that. But yeah, it tells me that these teams like the Cubs, anyone else that they were talking to about middle infielders, had no interest in Jordan Hicks. And who can blame them? As you guys said, it's like you were lucky to get rid of him in the first place with that kind of contract, with that money attached to him. So I have no problem with the deal. I thought it was smart. But I share Chris's reservation of like, okay, you cleared some more money. Are you actually going to do anything with it? Because feels like we, you know, Red Sox make a lot of these trades. Oh, they cleared the money. Now they can go out and do this. Well, they haven't been doing that. That was the whole point of the Rafael Devers trade was, well, look at all the money they cleared. Like now, you know, they can go gangbusters in the offseason, and they haven't done it. They've literally spent like no money this offseason until Ranger Suarez. But, you know, and even that was like, they claimed that was the main plan all along. I still think it was a bit of a pivot after they were just getting buried in free agency. But yeah, you look back now, like that Rafael Devers trade, you know, maybe at the time we were okay with it, but looking back now, just not using that, you know, the money you got back is absurd. And, you know, it leads to more deals like this where you can tell they're just desperate to get under the luxury tax threshold. But are they going to do anything with the money? I just don't think they will.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, the more I reflect on it, especially when taking the money part into consideration, forget about performance and potential, which just doesn't make sense to me. And I know that there's a lot of Sonny Gray fans out there, right? But like we are essentially still spending $20 million on Sonny Gray, who is historically bad in his, what will now be his home ballpark, Fenway Park. And, you know, I wasn't the biggest Lucas Giolito fan. I even said, I don't want to re-sign him. But in hindsight, knowing the money and the numbers and knowing what Giolito was able to do, at least in Fenway Park when he was on, which was probably more often than Sonny Gray is historically at this point, we could have got him in a much better contract, still been able to keep under the threshold, not handed $20 million to Sonny Gray, still signed Ranger Suarez, probably been closer to maybe 250, maybe even sub, and saved money with Jordan Hicks. And like, then think about it at that point. Puts you in a much better position, and it still accomplishes the ultimate goal of saving money, even if you're not going to spend it. And I truly believe we would probably have a better outcome than we are going to get. And again, I hope I'm wrong. It's not like I'm rooting for Sonny Gray to suck. It's just, it's hard not to have cause for concern with the reality of the, what he has put up to this point.
So with Sonny Gray, I mean, that trade isn't going to sink us now that we have Suarez. But it, we will reflect on it as wasted resources when that money could have been put towards a pretty decent bat. I mean, if you think about it, what did Alonso get? Well, I mean, he got $35 million a year, I think. But, you know, so that's only an extra $14 million more than what you're paying Sonny Gray. And I think the Red Sox are going to move some money, and we'll get into that shortly. I think more trades will happen that'll end up freeing up some money. But the Gray deal is just, it's just going to look so stupid, I think. And you've got a wealth of depth now. I always trashed depth a few years ago was, I can't even think of any names right now, but these fringe MLB players that, man, maybe I've just blocked out the bloom years, but we're just so used to bad players not being able to hold down, you know, the number five spot. Now you have Cutter Crawford, you have Patrick Sandoval, you've got Oviedo, you've got two stud prospects, one of which I think Connor Early could probably make 20 to 25 starts this year. Start him out in AAA. I think he can give you a lot. So that just underscores my previous point where we're not, at least we're not relying on Sonny Gray, but we will look back on it as, you know, a waste of $21 million that could have been allocated to, you know, a useful infielder. And as far as the Devers trade goes, I mean, I was probably the most hardcore, I'm not trading Rafi Devers, of anybody on this crew. And I'll remember for the rest of my life the moment that I was looking at my phone when that Robert Murray tweet popped up. He was the one who broke the news. He writes for FanSided of all sites. I'll just remember that tweet coming up, being in shock, then being in denial, then being extremely depressed. I mean, if Rafi Devers is in this lineup, whether it's third base, first base, DH, how many wins do we have with the players that are on the roster right now? Like this, I'd be calling it a 93 or a 94 win team.
I think it's fair.
Yeah, you're probably right, because, you know, the one thing this lineup doesn't have is power. You trade away Rafi Devers, you lost all the power in your lineup. And I don't want to hear, well, Tristan Casas has 35 home run potential. He's never going to get there because he can't stay on the field. I don't know what Roman Anthony's power potential is. I don't think it's 30 plus. I mean, maybe, but not at this point in his career. Maybe in a couple of years. But, you know, this year, if he stays healthy, I can see him getting between 20 and 25. But that's not enough. Jaron Duran, you know, he's a 15 to 20 homer guy. Wilson Contreras isn't a huge power bat. He might, you know, elevate some of his numbers this year playing at half his games at Fenway, but he's still, you know, he's a 20 to 25 homer guy. You don't have a bona fide 30 plus homer guy in the lineup. Not one. So you trade away Rafi Devers. Not only did you not reallocate the money, but you haven't replaced his power. You could have done that with Pete Alonso, but you were too scared to give him the extra year or whatever the case was. You know, there were guys that you could have traded for or signed that would have filled that power gap. You know, I know Kyle Schwarber wasn't a fit here, right? And he was most likely going back to Philly anyway, but that's another guy that you know, jettisoned off the roster and, you know, felt like you didn't need. So the thing with the Rafi Devers trade is that, yeah, we keep going back to it because the problem still exists. You didn't reallocate the money and you still don't have any power in this lineup. They're going to finish bottom five in home runs if they don't make some other kind of move. And I don't know who's out there that can change that. I don't even think Eugenio Suarez changes that. Like, I think that guy at this point in his career is declining so quickly. I don't think he's, you know, a guaranteed lock for 30 plus home runs. You know, he might be heading into his Mark Trumbo years where he hits like 19 homers and bats 180 this year. Like, it's getting scary with that guy. So yeah, that's the biggest problem is like, got all this money back, decided not to spend it, and you still have, you know, a lack of power in the lineup. So that's why I look at it and go, yeah, your pitching's really good, but that lineup's going to struggle to score runs, or at least, you know, score a lot of runs. So that's why they're still kind of in the low 80s, you know, in terms of wins for me at the moment. Like, I don't know. They're going to have to grind out a lot of games this season if this lineup stays the way it is. And I don't like their chances if that's the case.
No, I mean, last season we struggled against teams with good pitching. It just is what it is. And I got to be honest, even if you added, let's just say you got Eugenio Suarez and he was 30 plus home runs. Even if you added 30 home runs to this, I think it maybe brings you from a bottom five team to maybe bottom 10, maybe 11, 12. Like, I don't even know if it brings us that far out. You're still going to be in the bottom third of the MLB at that point, because the truth is we haven't replaced Devers. As much of a decline it looked like Bregman was on between injuries and even the power, we haven't even replaced him. Because let's face it, Marcelo Meyer is half of what you expect from Bregman at this point. He's 10 to 12 home runs, 13, 14, 15 maybe, if he figures it out. I mean, I think even when he reaches his potential, you're probably looking at maybe 20. I mean, to be honest with you, you got Trevor Story and Wilson Contreras are going to be battling it out to see who can get 25 home runs first. I mean, and that's where we're at now as Sox fans. So, I mean, we haven't replaced a lot of things, but I mean, the power is, it's concerning to say the least that we haven't replaced it. But, you know, the other thing that's concerning is, you know, you look at, because there's always a narrative with all these trades. I don't want to bring it back to Mookie Betts, but Mookie Betts, we got nothing. We got one good year out of Alex Verdugo and a backup catcher now at this point with Wong. Jeter Downs, he's even playing baseball at this point? Probably not. And now you look at the narrative there was like, oh, well, you know what? Someone's going to have to sign him to a deal. You're not going to get anything because there's nothing. They got to give him the money. All right, whatever. Then we have a player that's locked up for a decade that we trade, and the narrative is, oh, well, you're not going to get anything back because they're taking on all the money. And it's like, we can't have it both ways. And if that was the case, and maybe that's where I failed, is that should have been an indicator to me, who was a, you know, somewhat of a supporter of trading Devers, like, because my mindset was, all right, they're taking on all the money. Now we have all this money. Let's reallocate it. Let's bring in people that are bought into what we're trying to accomplish, replace the power. And the truth is, if they weren't willing to take on money or eat it to get better prospects or bona fide players to replace the output, it should have been an indicator that they were never going to spend the money. And shame on me for thinking different at this point. And until proven otherwise, that's where I stand.
You know, the most frequent question in my head since the Devers trade last, I think it was in June, wasn't it? What's the plan? Okay, you traded him. What's the plan? Because apparently the plan was Dustin May and Nathaniel Lau. That was the plan for 2025. You haven't spent that money in terms of free agency this winter. I mean, it sounds like they were close on Bregman. I mean, I'll take those reports at face value. It sounds like they offered him, I think it was 160, 165, something like that. Cubs went 175. But it's just like Breslow does not have a feel for the market, you know, and the fact that he put all of his eggs in the Bregman basket, and thank goodness we didn't saddle ourselves down with that. I guarantee you by the middle of the summer, by the All-Star break, the Cubs are going to have some intense remorse over that deal. So thank goodness we didn't get him, as far as I'm concerned. And I think generally speaking, you know, most of us agree on that. But all winter long, I mean, we just talked about Sonny Gray. You got him, and you know, and I hated that right away. And eventually we did get Suarez, which I never thought would happen. I thought all the eggs were in the Sonny Gray basket. But by the time we did get Suarez, you're like, okay, well, that's what, $26 million a year? And you still don't have a bat? So it's just extremely erratic right now. And Breslow's performance, I mean, it's just, it's questionable. And we're not over the second luxury tax now. We're just under it, as you guys have pointed out. But, you know, as I said, coming into the show, you know, we're not a $258 million roster. Like, it's not going to play to that value. And I don't think Breslow is going to solve it. And ironically, just a few days ago, the Minnesota Twins fired Derek Falvey, who was one of the people that refused the interview with the Boston Red Sox in 2023. And I wouldn't say he was like in my top three of guys that I wanted that winter. But when you look at the Minnesota Twins, they had a very good pitching program under him. They acquired Joe Ryan for basically just Nelson Cruz. Talk about winning a trade. And Cruz was just a rental, by the way, for the remainder of that season. They wound up with 7 years of Joe Ryan. I think he's got 2 years remaining on that. And, you know, the Pablo Lopez trade with the Marlins, that's been a very good trade. So I viewed Falvey as a competent choice that could overhaul this program in ways that Hein Bloom couldn't. And, you know, I had a long drive today. I woke up this morning in Phoenix, Arizona. I was out there all weekend and flew to Charleston. That's a cheaper airport than Myrtle, as it turns out. And so I had a 2-hour drive back up to Myrtle, and I listened to the owner of the Twins. His name's Tom Pollad or something. But, you know, he did a press conference, extremely transparent, which is refreshing. It's refreshing to see an owner get front and center in front of his own beat core. Like, we don't see that anymore. We haven't seen that in years. The last time John Henry spoke publicly was at that infamous winter meetings massacre where Bloom was like hyping his past good moves, of one of which apparently, according to him, was Garrett Richards. That crowd didn't take that too well. But anyway, but the owner of the Twins was like, well, you know, things just kind of ran its course. And I got the impression there was some philosophical differences. But the reason I'm bringing up Derek Falvey, if I'm John Henry and Sam Kennedy, I might take a look. I might take a look. I might make a phone call. I don't know how you sell him on it, but, you know, you're going into a strike year. Some big money is going to be coming off the books. Maybe you assure him that we're going to be a first or second tier luxury tax team for a while, and the goal is to win. I don't know. I think that's a guy. I think that's an opportunity. When Sherrington got fired in 2015, they pivoted to Dombrowski as soon as he became available. So I would take Derek Falvey. I would. I mean, that's a proven guy who did a lot with not very much in terms of payroll. I'd say the Twins are about a mid-market team. The only bad move that I can recall, well, two actually, I wouldn't have extended Byron Buxton, who plays 80 games a season. That doesn't look good. And then the Correa deal, that doesn't look good either. But still, you know, he's a competent guy and respected. Could probably make trades with other teams. I think they respect him. And, you look at the mess that we've been covering show after show, and we've covered a good bit of it tonight. I think this is a guy that cleans all that up. Now, is it realistic? Probably not. But I think it should be looked at.
I would definitely take a look at Falvey, yeah. And, I mean, he's a local guy. He's from Lynn, I believe. So he's a Massachusetts guy. I don't know if that would, incentivize him or not. And yeah, you can tell, like, there was definitely a disagreement, a philosophical disagreement with the Twins and sort of what happened the last couple of seasons, because especially this past trade deadline, we heard, oh, well, Joe Ryan's available, Byron Buxton's available. Like, they were basically for sale because they were, they were losing. They weren't going to, go very far. And then all of a sudden it changed to, actually, no, we're going to keep Buxton and we're going to keep Joe Ryan. We're not trading anybody. That felt like it was Poland kind of stepping in and saying, no, we're not, or Polad, sorry, that we're not trading any of these guys. Because now they want to sell the team too. So I think Falvey wanted to do, deals and kind of wanted to essentially blow it up a little bit, get some prospects back for guys like Buxton and Joe Ryan, who, were good assets. And I think Polad kind of stepped in and said, no, we're going through a sale right now. We can't just ship out all of our superstars. Like, we got to have a viable product to sell. So I think that's where the philosophical disagreement came in. But yeah, like, I would absolutely go after him if I'm the Red Sox. Now, will they do it? Probably not. I think the fact that he didn't want an interview here a couple of years ago tells you all you need to know. He probably just wants nothing to do with it. But yeah, I would absolutely go after him. I think he did a lot there in Minnesota. There were some bad ones. You're right. The Correa contract was not good. I would argue he didn't get a real good return on the Jose Barrios trade as well. That one didn't really work out for him. But the Pablo Lopez trade was great. The Joe Ryan trade was great. They've had some good young players come through there and develop. So he's done a pretty good job. And yeah, like, Boston has its own financial limits thanks to the owner, but it's real tough over there in Minnesota. You want to talk about penny pitching. That's what that ownership group is doing. They don't want to spend a dime on that team. So he definitely had some challenges he had to overcome, and he did a lot, despite that. So I definitely would be interested. Again, I don't think it's realistic. I'm not even sure the Red Sox will really make a full effort to go after him, because I think they're, I don't know, they're trying to put their trust in Breslow. But if you think for a second that he would take the job and he would be better at it, then yeah, you should definitely pick up the phone and see if he wants to take the job. He probably won't. He's probably looking for something else. But I think he'd be a good fit here. And I think, you know, kind of to your point, I think executives around the league respect him. Because the thing he kept hearing after he was let go, or after they parted ways, whichever way you want to put it, is people within the Twins organization described it as a haymaker that he was leaving. Like, they were shocked and they were really upset about it. And rival execs around the league were shocked too. They said, wow, like, we can't believe that Minnesota would let him go. So he definitely is respected around the league. I think that he would have a commanding voice in the room, which Breslow does not have. So I think he'd be great here. I just don't see it as realistic. So I'm curious to see what Falvey's next move is, if he, you know, signs on with the team or if he just kind of hangs out for a little bit. But if I'm the Red Sox, yeah, 100%, I'd go after him.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely be up for it, because I think he, you know, to Terry's point and what you said, Jason, like, he solves a lot of the problems that we currently have as constituted with Breslow at this point, because Breslow has been known to be extremely reluctant in pulling the trigger on what should be like the surefire, you have to deal people on this roster, unless it's with Helen Bloom, who is the only person he's comfortable trading with, coincidentally. But what Falvey's also proven is that he won't be taken advantage of. I mean, we've been attached to Joe Ryan forever, and there's this, you know, it's never been confirmed, but what it seems like is that we basically have lowballed them to try and get him. And he's like, no, like, I'm not going to trade him. I'd rather not trade him than trade him to the Red Sox for nothing. Whereas I do feel like Breslow has proven to us that he can 100% be had and taken advantage of in trades. You know, it's a shame, because, you know, to have Heim Bloom and then Craig Breslow, when you're trading the two cornerstones of the franchise in the last decade as your GM, it couldn't have been worse timing to have them at the helm with those moves, because we got absolutely nothing back and we have nothing to show for it. But I was a supporter of Breslow to a certain degree, in the sense that, I don't want to say support, maybe it's not the right word, but where I was like, all right, the owner's got to be 100% behind him, because he does everything he wants. He saves him money. He doesn't spend it. Like, he's the perfect guy. But like, to me, you could have Falvey or anyone. And I mean, crap, I could be saving the Red Sox money. You know, in hindsight, like, you could have not got Sonny Gray, kept Richard Fitz. And if it was, to your point, Jason, the plan all along to get Ranger Suarez, you could have just had Ranger Suarez been the number two starter that we quote unquote said we needed day one before we even got to free agency, put him there, and you could have had Richard Fitz on the back end. And it's a better starting rotation than we have currently now. And still added Oviedo, and then he had that extra depth for Fitz to keep in case there's injury, or to trade for an inevitable move that's necessary to bring power or better defense, whatever the thing is. And I think the biggest indictment for Breslow is he verbalizes the obvious of what are the holes for this team. Like, he comes out day one, we need a number two starter. He identifies that person as Sonny Gray, trades for him, spends essentially $20 million to do it, but then still signs Ranger Suarez. But he decides to sign Ranger Suarez when we have now identified the biggest need is in the infield. So he's making the moves. He's just not making them in real time at the right time. They're erratic, reactionary, and he's plugging the holes that were holes from last month. Meanwhile, we have two more that we're sinking with that since we've added. And it's to a point now where you can't even defend it in any sort of realm, because the truth is John Henry could have someone saving even more money, making better decisions, and have a better roster for $258 million. That's not even trying. And that's just a fact at this point.
The Twins have a pretty decent farm system, not stellar, but depending on what site you look at, they could be ranked anywhere from 8th to 12th from what I just gathered. So whoever takes over that team isn't going to have a bare cupboard to work with. So, you know, perhaps that's to Falvey's credit, you know, for doing that. It was weird that they fired him basically at the start of February. I don't recall that ever happening. You know, it's usually September, October, November. that's when an executive's probably going to be fired. And so I don't know. Because of that being unprecedented, you know, I'm willing to pipe dream about, you know, maybe you swap Breslow out. Like, what's the culture in that front office now? What's the confidence level in him, you know, amongst everyone else? That's what I want to know. And if you fired him, and again, let me be clear, I don't think they're going to fire him, but if you fired him and then Falvey was willing to do it, you don't really have to deal with the optics, because theoretically Falvey's your guy for quite a while now, and he's competent and he's respected, as we've underlined. So if he wasn't available and he wasn't willing to do it, you can't really fire Breslow until he has another terrible season. And I've pointed it out all winter long, most of last season. Other executives don't seem to respect Breslow. They don't seem to, and agents as well. Nobody wants to do business with him. Heim and Ben Cherington are the only two. And, you know, I think that speaks volumes about his ineptitude in that position. So, you know,
what the danger in that is, though, Terry, to your point, let's say you don't make a move and you wait that year, and then it gets to a point where he puts you in a position where you have to fire him. It's like I said before, it's all about timing. You could fire him, but what if the right candidates aren't on the board? And the biggest problem with the Red Sox right now is they lack one word: credibility. There's no credibility in that front office, and you don't have it with Craig Breslow. And you know what? Falvey, is he the perfect general manager, vice president of baseball operations, whatever the hell his title is? Probably not. There is none. And he's probably not close to it. But what he does, based off of the remarks that you hear, is he brings credibility to an organization. He's well-respected. People are willing to deal with him. Doesn't get taken advantage of. And like, something we are just so severely lacking is credibility. And my fear is we are not going to make a move. We're not going to bring someone in. We're going to wait. He's going to force our hand up to fire him. And it's going to be one of those years where you're interviewing more Craig Breslows.
Well said.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely the case, because, yeah, I think Falvey's going to move on to something else. I don't think that he, you know, if he didn't want to interview here 3 years ago, I'm not sure why he'd want to do it now after, again, you traded away your best player. You know, yeah, you have Crochet, you have Roman Anthony. There's some good pieces here. You still have a pretty decent farm system, but you've got a severely flawed lineup. And at the end of the day, again, it's, you know, you got another owner that's going to penny pinch. If I'm Falvey, I want to go, you know, with an owner that is willing to spend money, like go to the Dodgers or something, you know, go to the Phillies. Like, not that Dombrowski's going to go anywhere anytime soon, but go somewhere like that. Why would you want to come to Boston, where John Henry is so like focused on getting under the luxury tax and not spending? He already went through that with Minnesota. So my guess is he'll pick somewhere that he has a little more free reign and, you know, won't be controlled as much. So yeah, hopefully it's, you know, with Breslow, I don't know how the season's going to go. I don't know, you know, what moves are coming. If there are any more coming, it might be it. You know, we keep hearing about Nico Horner and all these other guys. I'm starting to think that David Hamilton's going to be your opening day second baseman. So you'll have Hamilton at second, Meyer at third, and that's your infield. So if that's the case, yeah, it could be rough. Could be a rough year for Breslow and the Red Sox. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, if any breaking news happens, any major trade or signing, we'll be here and we'll talk about it. But otherwise, it's, as I said, we're kind of in the doldrums of the offseason. So news is kind of slow at the moment. I don't expect the Red Sox are going to do anything all that urgent. But luckily, spring training, not too far away now. We're getting a little bit closer. Doesn't feel like it outside, but we are getting closer. So we'll have a lot more baseball to talk about, and we'll be with you guys every step of the way. So enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and we will talk to you guys later. Take care.